Accession number 13359, George Richardson, Reel 9.
Mr. G.S. Richardson, Reel 9. You were talking about having some altercations with the Sherwood Foresters who had been on the island for some time, Mr. Richardson.
Yes, we. When we met them in pubs, I think they were a bit jealous of us for the fact that we'd just come out from England a few weeks. They had been out in the Middle East for quite a long while, being regular troops. And because they thought that Cyprus was theirs, it was a Crown Colony, of course, and there had been the Crown Colony troops, guard and all the main officers in Cyprus before we had arrived and started turning it into a fort. So we had one or two fights, and usually you'd finish it up with a few German infantry fighting with the Sherwood Foresters. When the Redcaps came along, they would sort them out, break the fight up, and usually run the Sherwood Foresters in the clink and let us off. So I think it was a bit of bias, and this riled the Sherwood Foresters. I think we heard that not many of the Sherwood Foresters got into trouble about it, about these fights, because I think their officers understood. They were all regular army officers, of course, that were in charge of the Sherwood Foresters, and understood the friction that was between us. And they'll probably know that they were being put on charges rather than what we were. So I don't think that there's much game of it. Besides, I think that where those large troops get together, they expect a little bit, because after all, we are fighting men, and we're trained to fight.
Do you think that as territorials and conscripted men, these regulars thought you weren't real soldiers?
That was the impression that we got, that we were just there filling in a large expanse of land, and that they would be the ones that were going to do the real fighting, because they were trained soldiers. But after all, we'd done some heavy training also. As a matter of fact, about after we'd been on about 6 weeks on the island, they put a big exercise out with the whole of the brigade, that that cleared a valley of all animals and residents, and it our artillery had been ranging along this valley for a few days, because we had been sent up there with the on signal courses, and we could see the artillery firing along this valley. The brigadier had put an exercise out to be watched by all the rest of the troops, and we had to advance along this as a full brigade, overlapping each other. And the brigade artillery, 25 pounders, were firing over our heads in front of us. And there were very strict rules on, because we had live ammunition, and whenever we saw targets, we had to fire at them. Machine gun posts were quite a realistic exercise. In fact, the most real exercise that I'd ever taken part in. It's the first time I'd really heard artillery bombardment over my head, hear this gun firing, the shells screaming over the top, and then landing a few hundred yards in front. And you had to keep advancing. We went along carrying our signal equipment, but also bearing arms, ready to fight the way we were doing action. But we were just slightly rear of our forward infantry, as we were doing action. So that was quite a good exercise, and it lasted for a full day. And I think everybody was pleased because we were told that if it hadn't been a success, we were going to have to do the same thing again. And they didn't want to waste £25 ammo.
You mentioned artillery. Were there any other arms of the services that you were working with?
Well, yes. We were in close contact with Royal Corps of Signals through our own telephones from battalion. Whenever we ran outside of our battalion, it was always to Royal Corps of Signals. Although occasionally if we had to ring either the 8th or 9th Battalion Durham's or our artillery, then they had direct lines between our signallers and their signallers. But back to Brigade Headquarters, it was always through the Royal Corps of Signals. Also, our dispatch riders, we had two in our battalion that had been with us right through from the start. They were part of our signal battalion, and they ran messages, important messages that had to go between company commanders and battalion quarters, and also to other units within our brigade. But the Royal Corps of Signals used to do a daily run and used to bring it into our battalion quarters with the dispatches. We had to sign for them. We received the dispatches. We would hand over dispatches, we would get a receipt for the dispatches, and we would off to back to wherever they were dressed to. And of course, the signal NCO in charge of the office would hand them on to the adjutant.
Did the RAF come in for support on any of your exercises?
Not on Cyprus, no. The Royal Air Force had flown in and they were building up their station above Larnaca. And that Royal Air Force station above Larnaca is now the Larnaca Airport, where I've flown in once or twice since on for holiday.
Did you get any opportunity to work with tanks?
Not in Cyprus. As a matter of fact, there was only, I don't think I had any tank units at all in Cyprus. No. We only had our carriers. All the three battalions had their carrier platoon, of course, with the Bren gun carriers. And we had the support company, which was Bren gun carriers, anti-tank guns, and mortar platoon. They were all under Captain Cole, who was became later on quite a boy in action. Later on in desert, he got the MC up in the Gazala line. But that's in future.
Had there been any changes to the officers of the battalion by this time?
Lieutenant Colonel Battiscombe. I can't remember this. Lieutenant Colonel Battiscombe went abroad with us. He had been a regular army colonel, and I'm pretty positive that Lieutenant Colonel Battiscombe was with us until he was captured later on in the desert. And then we had one or two changes in commanding officers. There was one or two of our older officers had been sent back to base jobs and younger officers had came in. But our signal officer, Lieutenant Hulse, stayed with us right through from joining us in England and until he was eventually captured along with most of the battalion headquarters, Lieutenant Colonel Battiscombe, and one or two more.
Were your NCOs still the same?
They were changing quite a lot as some of the older ones were getting promoted up to sergeants, and myself and one or two more made lance corporals and corporals. Some of them sergeants got demoted, mostly through fighting among sergeants or even sergeant majors. I know of one sergeant, he was He was demoted down to private and up to sergeant in about 3 months, about three times. He was a good soldier, one of the best, but whenever he had the chance of a drink, he got fighting with somebody that he had a grudge against.
Do you recall his name?
No, I wish I could, because I remember when we were up in later on, he was a right lad. We had him in detention in Iraq, and he used to take all the money off the guards, playing cards every night. The new guard would be changed for 24 hours. He would play with the money, win all the money off the guard, put it into a green envelope, give it to the patrol. The corporal in charge of the post, the dress room himself, it would be delivered in the morning when the post arrived after he'd been inspected, because he wasn't allowed to have any money. So the money was a must. And I know he was in detention for 2 weeks for fighting with the sergeant major. But he was soon promoted up again to corporal and then sergeant. He was too good at an NCO to be missed from the battalion.
You'd been with the battalion some time now, so obviously you'd be forming opinions about officers and NCOs.
Yes.
Were any coming out as particularly outstanding?
It wasn't until after we'd actually been up in the desert that we found, up in Iraq. After we'd left Cyprus, we went back to Haifa by Royal Navy ships. And after 2 weeks on Haifa, the transport was all the way across the desert, well, around about 1,200 miles, I think, up into Iraq. And wasn't until we were established again with a large camp about 12 miles outside of Mosul in Iraq that we had one officer who bought himself a large sheepskin coat. I think that was Major Owen, because he was a right lad all the way through. Major Owen had this large... In fact, there's one or two of the company commanders got themselves sheepskin coats, which he used to wear at night. I think myself that COR used to frown on it, but because we're miles from any habitation or civilians or towns, it wasn't a lack of discipline, it was just a matter of they were keeping themselves warm, because while we were in Iraq, we had very cold nights and very warm days.
Before we leave Cyprus, what was the health of the battalion like?
Oh, I think we were very fit. I would say that Cyprus had been a means of bringing us through the acclimatisation period. After about 8 weeks out in the Middle East, we were used to run around without our shirts on, we were all suntanned, and we could stand the heat. We were, of course, the sun was beginning to die before we left Cyprus, towards the end of September before we left Cyprus, and we were able to go without our the name this son had?
Topi.
The topis. Our topis were very expensive. That we were sealed before we left England. Cork, the regular army, large topi with our DLI on one side and our divisional sign on the other. Very expensive. We handed them in that winter, and the next topis that we were issued with were the thick, more compact topi that was very thick and more or less better for sheltering us from the sun in the hot desert.
You had said you were in tents. Was this the case all in, the time now?
In Cyprus, we were in two-man bivouacs. Most of our platoon were together in a beautiful little orchard, just about half a mile from our battalion headquarters, which is in the nearest village. And except for covering our signal duties and guard duties, in the afternoons and evenings we were more or less just lying around in this area, eating grapes. We could just stretch our hand out and pull a bunch off the nearest tree. There was all kinds of trees that we'd never seen before, fig trees, the caribs that we used to call locusts back in before the war, when we used to get the chunk of stinking black locust in a lucky bag. Well, we saw them growing huge pods of and we later found out that up on the hillside over towards Kyrenia, the whole hillside was covered with these carob trees, and that was the main crop of that area, is to take in the carobs and ferment them, take a lot of sugar, which was sent back to England for refining, and the husks were sent back to be animal feed, a very rich feed that.
Had the sanitation arrangements improved?
We had more permanent latrines, but of course we were in smaller groups. That was out in the centre, and we were in smaller groups and more spread about, because we were expecting to be areas, but never came. So I think our sanitation conditions were much better there than what they were in the desert, the 2 weeks we spent in the desert, and later on when we went up into Iraq.
Had your food improved from the brief time you were in the desert?
Yes, we had more green food, and of course, because we could go into Nicosia two or three times a week, we could eat egg and chips and things like that, quite cheap. Wine was plentiful and very cheap, sixpence a full bottle, and a full bottle was enough for anybody. After you drank a full bottle, you were feeling a bit, although we did get used to it.
What was your pay?
Oh, by then I'd had quite a few year, couple of year increments, single increments, Lance Corporal added pay, later on full corporal pay. Wages were going up all the time, and we had adequate, because everything, we had free rations of cigarettes, and nappy supplies were very cheap. So I think for what we needed, they didn't overburden us with money. When if a man had a few shilling extra, you'd in 1 week, then he'd go and purchase a woman for a couple of hours for it, and that was about the only extra thing that they could do with money, because cinemas and such like that were more or less free. We just walked in, we didn't pay it at all.
Were you expected to maintain a high standard of appearance?
Oh yes, because it was a crown colony, and they'd been used to respecting British troops, because they'd been, as I say, just more or less what you would expect on a crown colony, regular army troops, piercing guards on the outside, all men, buildings in the capital, in Nicosia, then expect the same kind of treatment from us. But we were well disciplined troops anyhow. We daren't put a finger out of line, otherwise you're on the charge, and that was one thing I kept myself from.
Mail, was that coming through to you from England?
Because it was mostly by ship at some time, anything from 6 to 12 weeks after a letter, but we did have airmail, the airmail letters that I think my mother would receive in about 2 weeks, and she would start getting airmail letters from the post office and sending out. So it depended on how the Royal Air Force flew them in, and the Royal Navy. Feeding Farm Augusta.
How did news come to you about what was happening in the war in other places?
Well, if we'd get into a Nuffy, the Nuffies usually had a BBC World Programme, but we could receive some programmes through wirelesses, our 18 wirelesses. We could tune in sometimes. In fact, usually when we try to tune into a BBC, we do it to get Lord Ho-Ho given names and of different troops that they'd captured and places and ships that they'd sunk and all the rest of it. Propaganda. Got quite a lot of propaganda from our stations.
It was pretty bad time still, losing in various places. How did that affect you at all?
Well, when we're on Cyprus, we're having a good life, but we're expecting invasion. But we thought that we were quite a lot stronger than they'd been on Crete when they'd captured Crete. We'd been fully mobilised. We knew every inch of the island. We were still running around with exercises from one end of the island to the other. And if any paratroops had been dropped, we'd probably soon been onto them. And I think they would have had a hard problem to capture Cyprus. But it never happened.
Have you any other outstanding memories of Cyprus?
No, not really.
So you moved, you said after 3 months, but what date would this be?
I think towards the end of September, coming into October. They moved us from, again by Royal Navy, from Farm Augusta back to Haifa. We disembarked in Haifa and it took us up to a place which is known in the Bible days, Acre, A-C-R-E, spelled. We're just outside there, where the Knights of St. John had landed, and all kinds of problems with the Crusades and all the main landing part. Well, we were there around about 2 weeks. It was a lot different to Cyprus. There was miles and miles of desert around us, but where we were had been made into a large oasis by the Jewish people. The Jewish had planted orange plantations, grapefruit, first time I'd ever seen grapefruit on trees. Grapefruit, oranges, lemons. And quite a lot of cotton in the gardens. They were all lush and they were all full of fruit. As a matter of fact, when we got to know that we were going to be on the move up to Iraq, I filled the kit bag full of oranges, and that lasted me quite a way up through the desert, and quite a lot of the lads did. The oranges were plentiful, and everything that was in our grasp, we took us being ours.
What were you doing at Acre?
Getting, first of all the division back from Cyprus. We were assembled there more or less as a staging post. We had large tented camps again, and we had all our transport were given to us painted with the desert colours, the sand coloured. All our transport had to be gone over, fully conditioned to be good for crossing the desert.
Was this transport that you brought from Cyprus or was waiting for you
there? I think that quite a lot of, we'd lost quite a lot of transport that we'd had back in England. Our transport on Cyprus was mostly light stuff. Most of the heavy transport in Cyprus were run by the Royal Army Service Corps. When we got to Acre, the battalion was completed with all our wagons that were needed to transport the full battalion by our own transport. And of course, we took about 2 weeks, and we had one or two get-togethers with Royal Artillery and other units. The band of the Royal Army Ordnance Corps, remember, came into our lines and played a large concert for us one night. We had a cinema rigged up for 2 or 3 days a week. But that was only a staging post. And then we were told that we were going to go on a long trip across Transjordan.
Did they tell you where you were going? At this stage?
I think they did. I think they did. While we were there, there was a fighting column sent out from the 149 Brigade with, I think, the 8th Battalion. And they went into Libya. Libya was under the Vichy France. And they went in on the road.
Is it Syria, you mean?
Syria. That's right. They went into Syria and they took Syria over to be ruled by Free French. There was no fighting, as I understood it, but I didn't take part in that exercise. But they were only away for a few days. And I think they put other regular troops that were in the desert at that time into Syria to maintain the forces, because Syria had been a road in for the Germans into that end of the Mediterranean. So that was taken over.
Iraq, was this an area of the world that was known to you in any way?
No, except through Nebuchadnezzar and Bible stories. When we did cross over, we were going along the Iraq to Haifa pipeline. We're travelling along the line of the pipeline, and each night we'd stop at the main pumping station, and they were roughly around about 110 miles apart. So we're travelling 110 miles and then stopping and camping. And at those stations, there was usually supplies of fuel, petrol, water, where they'd already set up Royal Army Service Corps and engineers, and also set up little nappies. So they would come round with a little nappy truck and we'd get chocolate and biscuits and things like that. But each morning we'd be up and transported in pretty dusty conditions across the desert, following the pipeline all the time. And when we'd got to the next pumping station, we would stop, put our bivouacs up, and camp for the night. And everybody, the MTO, would make sure that all the trucks had been maintained overnight, ready for the next day. We had very few breakdowns with our transport. I think we were well maintained by our own empty company itself.
Were you following a road in line, or did you spread out?
Oh, we're spread out. I think in battalion. I think the whole of our brigade moved in once. In lines, 6th Battalion, 8th Battalion, 9th Battalion. I think the 8th Battalion was to our right and 9th Battalion to our left. And we travelled across desert. There was some parts well-worn tracks, and once or twice we did see buses that were going along this track from Iraq back to Haifa, probably with people going back on to Haifa on leave or whatever, I don't know. But we used to see them fully loaded, usually piled high on the roof, goods and chattels. And they were going along. Eventually we got to Habania, which was a Royal Air Force station, even before the war. It had been a place where Amy Johnson had landed on the Australia flight. So I'd heard of Habania before, and we camped just outside Habania, about a mile up, on a plateau. There'd been a battle with some Indian troops, and I think some 5th Columns that were in Iraq at the time. It had a big battle just before we got there, because burned out wagons and